I'm here with playwrights Dwight Storing and Gary Kirkham, and we're here to talk about one act, Rage Against Violence. Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Hey, girl.
So, I guess basically you want to tell me how you got involved with this project to start out with. I know this is through Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region.
Yeah, well, Gary and I have actually been working with them for about 3 years on their awareness projects. Every November, they have an awareness event. Mm-hmm. November is Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Right.
And so Gary and I have been working with them for about 3 years. And we've done, over the past 3 years, we've done three short films.
That's true,
with them.
Too. Yeah.
And they use them at their events. And, mm-hmm. you know, it builds awareness. And then they, of course, have them on YouTube. And, you know,
I've seen them on Facebook, yeah, actually, now that I think about it. I can't believe I didn't connect that till now.
Yeah. In particular, last year, the two films we did for them last year have had really great response, and one of them is based on the idea of there's no place like home, which is sort of the dark side of that statement. And the other one was called 5 Days in Haven House, which was intended as a way to talk about the need for replacing the shelter in Cambridge, Haven House Shelter, and they have a massive capital campaign last year to get that done. And there's still short money on that, and that's partly what this fundraiser on Monday night is about.
Yeah, that is great. Yeah. I know this is an hour-long play, and I know you listen to a lot of stories. So how were you able to call all these stories into an hour, and what kind of effect did it have on you guys?
Wow. Well, I guess we started off with about maybe 18 hours worth of material, and so then paring that down was in some sense quite easy and other sense devastating, because you're taking away part of their story, and yet there was a core to each woman's story and a few men that really, really sung. And when we paired it with other stories, all of a sudden their stories blossomed. You realize that there was this sort of similarity in a lot of the narratives. You know, I met this wonderful guy.
Yes.
He seemed like he made me feel like I was a princess, and he made me feel alive. And then.
Yeah, I actually got that written down as their common thread.
It is. It's like a script that these men are following. And so I think that was it. It was hard some days for sure to just work on this play. There was three or four of the stories were actually interviewed at the Women's Crisis Services by their staff and transcribed. And we were given the transcription with some of the details taken out for anonymity. So they had anonymity. And they were telling these stories in a very safe place. And so we had those scripts, and I said, well, I'll read it. And I started reading this one out loud, and I was doing my actor thing. You know, I was getting into character. I love her. She's so interesting, and, you know, I like her already. And I'm reading her, and about, you know, 5 minutes in, the trouble started in the relationship, and I'm like, okay. And then about the 7 minute mark, the floor just dropped out. And I was, you know, I was there, stopped mid sentence. I was like, oh my gosh. And closed up the script and looked at Dwight, and Dwight and I just said, I'm done. I'm done for the day. And it was like 10:30 in the morning.
Man.
And I went, you know, we were experiencing her story for 7 minutes, and it was too much for us. There was so much more there. And we went, these stories are really, really, really powerful and transformative. And how do we now tell them?
Yeah, and I think that's really at the heart of what this piece is about, is to how do we tell these stories without going to exposing people to this, all of the pain and violence that these women were exposed to, because yes, that did happen to them, but what we're seeking to do here is to try and draw attention to this issue, to help people understand this is not just an issue for these women whose stories we're telling here. It's an issue for everyone in the community.
Yeah.
And how do we act as the voice for these women? And that's really at the heart of what we're doing, because in many ways, these people's voices are silenced by the violence.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though they're telling us their story now, to have the police chief, Brian Larkin, be there on Monday night and stand up and do his part to tell these stories, that is an amazing community-building exercise. And so that's where we really feel we're kind of bringing something to this along with their real words, the real words of real people.
It's true. And I think it's one out of every four women is abused.
Yeah.
And a lot of women don't say a word.
They most just, don't say a word, yeah.
Most don't
yeah.
say a word. Yeah. And I remember I went to see Voices Carry, which was the same night as Bill Cosby, a center in the square.
Yeah.
It was kind of a pretty wild night here in Kitchener-Waterloo. And Brenda Halloran was there. And she got up and she spoke about a sexual harassment incident that happened to her in the workplace. And I was just blown away.
Yeah.
I think she's part of this, right?
She's one of the readers, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Who are the other readers? I know, but just for people, like for the listeners that don't know, who else is in the cast?
Well, I think there are some high-profile people. I mean, Mayor of Cambridge, Doug Craig, is there.
Yeah.
And
Catherine McGarry,
yes, of course. And I mentioned the police chief.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing, too, that we have some other people who are part of the cast who are not maybe that high profile, but they bring so much to it. And one of those people is Amy Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
She's an Indigenous woman. She's an activist in the community. And she reads one of the key roles in the play. It's very short, but it's very key.
Mm-hmm.
But she brings such an authentic voice to this situation. Also, Charlotte Armstrong. People mm-hmm. may know her from Nerd Night.
Yeah, she's well known around the area.
Voice.
She's
and
great.
For some people who are and have been to some of the lectures at Third Age Learning, mm-hmm. Pat Aplovich,
mm-hmm.
who is going to bring her voice to the project as well. So I think when you get this kind of broad cross section in the community, again, we are actually, I think we're acting as a megaphone for these voices that have been silenced.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, we work with them and we do the actor thing, internalize it, how do you connect to it? And to a person, all of them have found a personal connection to these women's stories one way or another, either their story or somebody connected to them mm-hmm. or somebody they know intimately. They go, yes, I know this story. And we all know this story. And they all bring something to it. Dwight and I have been blown away by we've been rehearsing them individually because all these people can never get together in the same room at the same time, except for the 30th. So we've been doing it individually, which is like a time where we have this moment with them. And we've been like chills, just chills up my spine. I go, I've never heard an actor doing what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
You're really connecting to us. And I think it's these words of these people. They go, I'm not going to try this. I'm not going to interpret it. I'm going to just empathize with it. And that empathy is what actors die for and try for and spend years doing. These people are doing kind of right away. And it's like it's for us, the performance level is so authentically and honest and somehow uplifting. I think these stories in the end, a lot of these women are survivors. And that's a wonderful, wonderful, powerful story. To tell that, I got out, and that's why I'm telling you this story. I got out.
In case there's someone sitting in the audience, because this is a collective, it's theater is discourse, and theater is a collective experience. So in case there's someone sitting in the audience that is afraid to say anything, and maybe you'll have the courage to speak up after hearing some of these stories.
Well, statistically, there will be people in the audience, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a woman who is like, nobody knows what I'm going through. And that's one of the lines in the play, and I imagine quite a few women going, this is my story.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be counselors there, obviously. But, I think this is a community. A lot of times I watch a documentary, and I can't watch these stories because I feel powerless. And what I love about theater is that you get together as a community, and just being in that room together, all of us together, the sound of my voice going, yes, lightly breathing in that same room is an act in itself of unity. And being there is an act of unity. And you're starting an action by just attending that as a group. And you walk home. You get to go in the lobby and talk to somebody about what you just saw.
You drive home,
you talk about it, and you go to work and say what you saw. Yeah.
Are you guys going to have a Q&A after?
Unfortunately, we don't have the time to do that at that night. But as I say, the agency is going to have counselors available. We will be available in the lobby for a short while after the play. So we expect there to be a certain amount of dialogue in the lobby after the play. But I think the other thing that I think is important to both Gary and I on this choral is that what we're doing in conjunction with Women's Crisis Services Waterloo Region is that we're going to make this play available royalty-free
to
any other agencies.
Yeah.
or theater groups that want to use this as a fundraiser or as an awareness event or an education. We started to put that out there through Gary's network in particular, mm-hmm. and the response has been pretty amazing.
We're 5 for 5. We've given it to 5 different people in the arts community, and all 5 came back and said, yeah, I'm going to do this. It's mm-hmm. It's like, wow, okay, that's... nothing we've ever done has that kind of response to it. And I think it's the authentic voices that people hear and go, wow, I know this story, but you've got so many of them coming together and telling such honestly true stories.
And I think the other thing, too, that can't be forgotten in this is the vision that was shown by the Women's Crisis Services in terms of the relationship between Mary Zilney, the CEO, right. and Gary and I. I mean, the trust that she placed in us, the vision she's shown in leading this and saying, you know, I really want to do something different this year. And we put this idea out, you know, saying, you know, well, we could do this and this could be interesting and we could do a verbatim theater piece. And she latched onto that and she supported us through it. And her management team has supported us through our work. And you know, that as an artist is a gift in itself. Mm. It's so rare that we have that kind of response and support and trust in our work. And so that has been absolutely brilliant from my point of view.
Yeah.
They need money.
Yeah,
it's always money as a segue.
Yeah, money is a good segue for, you know, for this.
Well, I know. Yeah. I know. I'm thinking of how is this set up? What does this look like?
That has become one of the interesting pieces. Yeah, yeah.
I think I already know the answer to this. If I was, but
the Dunfield Theater is huge.
Oh, I know.
You know, you get in that theater, you're standing on the stage, and I'm completely lost, and that's why I work with Gary, because he has production experience.
He can project.
And he knows the right words to say to the technical people. So, I kind of say, what do we do about this, Gary? So what do we do about this, Gary?
And part of it is
he's
the aesthetic.
Guy.
Because these are these women's stories, like the vagina monologues, you're probably familiar with that. It's so essential that these stories be read, because you want the audience to always know that these are somebody else's words. Mm-hmm. And the person saying these words is an act of empathy. They're not embodying the character, but they're connecting to that character. And that beautiful connection between those things, as a playwright, you never get much better than that first read of the script, where the actors are really connecting with each other, and magic happens. They go, I never thought that was about.
The first read through that must have been.
Oh, it was chilling and beautiful, and quite a does this work as a play?
How long have you been working with the actors, and how have you seen it evolve? And it's going to evolve probably more on Monday night.
Well, I think the process really, there are the readers who are going to be there Monday night, but we've had we've had two readings of this play in which we brought in different people from the community to read various roles to help us develop the play, to help us hear it. And that kind of thing. So we can't forget those people as well. Those were very pivotal moments. Yeah. Both of those readings. Yeah. And so we've been working on this since March. It's about March.
Yeah.
And we've had various milestones along the line. So it's been quite a long process. Yeah. And we have not heard it with the current readers.
So the first rehearsal
will be on Monday afternoon about 3:30. So we're going to be, we won't need any coffee on Monday.
It'll be natural adrenaline.
Oh yeah, in one sense, and that they, a lot of these people don't know that thing that happens with an audience. We're trying to warn them.
Once you get in front of an audience, it's different.
It's different, man. And also
it
goes out there, and all of a sudden that you hear this response, you go, right, they got that, or they did. Yeah, I'm doing this. So I'm connecting to it in a different way now, because I feel that there's this audience that is feeling it, and you have this harmony happen between the audience.
You have the energy. Coming back.
You cannot but feel that. And I said, be prepared to do this. And What we're also telling them that, you know, there's this moment that's this truth and honest that you read it the first time. A lot of people say, wow, this is heavy and very moving and very uplifting and all that. And I said, you know, let that happen because you are just a person reading this empathy. So if something, you get flustered, and that's beautiful of the part that this is not a professional. Oh, you know, he went up in line. No, he said that line and it was too much. And you saw him just absorb that and then carry on. And
you might see a little bit of improvisation or ad-libbing. I wouldn't be surprised. But people have a tendency once they get on stage, they find different things as they morph. And sometimes, I don't know, sometimes when I've been on stage, I feel like I'm outside myself. It's like I'm saying the lines, but you don't... Is that me saying that? That's not me.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in character.
Yeah. And so, I think those things, there's something really honest that can happen. So they're saying these people's words and think they're reading them, but all of a sudden something else happens and you go, I'm saying these words that are written down, but something else emotionally, or I'm going someplace else. And that's the magic of theater. And I believe that there's going to be a lot of magic on that night.
Yeah. And so that's part of the reason why we've kind of stripped this right down. Yeah. It's going to be presented pretty starkly. There's going to be 12 microphones across the stage because there are 12 readers. There's going to be 12 stools. There's going to be 12 music stands. And we have a projection screen just in behind the readers, in which we're going to use to kind of set tone and mood and to give it a sense of atmosphere. But it's not, the idea is that this will not overwhelm the reading. It's about hearing these voices in this huge space. And I think it's going to be pretty moving.
Mm. So the action's in the text.
Yeah.
To quote George F. Walker.
Yes.
That is great. I think it'll be great. I'm really looking forward to it. So it starts Monday at what time? 6:30?
6:15.
6:15.
Yes,
okay.
There's going to be hors d'oeuvres and a open bar for a while before the performance.
Yeah.
But people will enter the theater about 7.
7.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's 35 at the door. Okay.
Yeah.
But it,
35 to get it. But it is a fundraiser.
It is a fundraiser.
Everything goes to Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region, which I think is great. Yeah. We're going to take a musical break. And I'm going to introduce you guys to a band named Cattle. They have a song called FU Blues. And it's based on, you know, women getting harassed. And this is pretty raw, actually. Sarah gets harassed by a guy in a bar. Look out. This is Cattle on Coral FM. this is, if you see this video online, you'll go, whoa. This is FU Blues on Coral FM.
Saw me smile and you fingered your ride. Downtown. writer I knew back in Texas by the name of Blaze Foley. It's called Drunken Angel.
That's Lucinda Williams and Drunken Angel on Coral FM, and I'm here with my special guest playwrights, Dwight Storing and Gary Kirkham. So we're just talking about some of the cast members involved in One Act, Rage Against Violence, and one of them is Zach Parsons. So how did he get involved with this project?
Yeah, I think Zach was an interesting part of it. I knew Zach because I used to be with The Lost and Found, and I actually taught Zach back in the day. There was one of the, when we were starting to work on this piece, a friend of mine, another kid, Zach LaRoche, was posting on Facebook about this murder trial, the okay. Denise Bordeaux murder trial. And he's talking about justice for my aunt, and I just reached out to him, and I said, you know, is that your aunt? And he said, yeah, my aunt was murdered by her boyfriend.
Right.
And the reason I'm actually using his name, because he actually is, he wants his name to, everybody else is anonymous. He said, no, I want my name to be in this piece because I want my aunt Denise Bordeaux's name to be known and to right. be able to know her story. And so we got together and we interviewed him in the middle of the trial. Like, the trial was happening that day, and he was talking about the trial going on and what it was like. And then we turned it into part of the play. It became a beautiful, tragic, touching story. And Zach Parson, who was also in that same class with them, is now reading that character. So they know each other. They've worked together. And now Zach is reading Zach. One
great.
Zach is reading the other Zach. And it was, I mean, for both of them, it was quite something to say, a friend of mine is now going to be playing me. And the other guy says, I'm playing my friend. and that's a very important part of the story.
Well, and I think the thing that's so powerful about this, I keep going back to the idea of community, but for these young men, I mean, these are guys in their early 20s, and part of the struggle I think we have with this issue is for men to see themselves in it and to see their role.
I was just going
it.
To say.
And so this is part of why this was such a gift to us with both Zach. Both Zachs. that we had this opportunity to pull this into the piece and to be able to discuss that idea of about men and what is their role. And one of our other readers, Charlotte Armstrong, as a matter of fact, said, you know, what we really need in this world to manage this issue is we need a new masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
true. Yeah.
It's kind of our hope that through this, that we're going to be able to show at least this audience what it means to be a new man, to be a man that can understand this issue. Because one of the things that Zach said to us is that now, when he sees a friend being treated badly by their partner, he said, I can't stop myself. I have to step in. I have to say, you know, you shouldn't be letting this happen. Let's talk about it. You've got to figure out a way to stop this. You got to go and get some help. And you know, he says sometimes it makes me the biggest asshole in the world. But he said on the other hand, sometimes
you might be saving a life.
Yeah, exactly. and so when you see this kind of thing going on and people standing up. And saying, men standing up and saying, you know, I won't tolerate this. I think this is where we need to go. We need to be able to speak out about it in openly and freely in the community. This is not something to sweep under the carpet.
No, it needs to be out in the open. So I'd like to thank both of you for coming in so much. This is great. I'm definitely coming on Monday night. Okay. There's no way I'm going to miss this.
Okay.
It's such an important night. It starts at 7 o'clock, but the theater opens at 6:15. There's hors d'oeuvres and bar beforehand. It's $35 at the door. It's a fundraiser. Before you go, is there something I can play for you guys, a song I can play?
Oh, wow, you snuck that one.
I always snuck stuff in. I always tell people saying that. When you put me on the spot, you always ask me for my favorite song.
Chrissy Hine, something from Chrissy Hine.
Yeah, what? She's my favorite.
Oh, gosh, good.
I love Chrissy. Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. I was going to suggest Hank Williams.
Well, we can do him, too. Cause
they probably did a duet. They probably did a duet. It's out there.
Well, you know what? Someday, you never know. He'll come back as a hologram and they can do something together because that would be perfect because she's so freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I have her latest album on white vinyl.
Oh, wow.
How about I'll Stand By You?
Okay.
That's perfect. Okay. Well, you guys, you know what? I want to wish you all the best. I say bravo to both of you for putting this play together. Thank you on behalf of all women. I got a lump in my throat. And we'll see you on Monday.
We'll see you on Monday, Coral.
Thanks so much, Coral.
This is The Pretenders. I'll Stand By You on Coral FM. And Scott Merritt is coming up in a few minutes, I think.
Oh, why you look so sad? Tears are in your eyes. Come on and come to me now. Don't be ashamed to cry. Let me see you through. Cause I've seen the dark side too. When the night falls on you, you don't know what to do. Nothing you can make me love you less. I'll stand by you. I'll stand by you. Won't let nobody hurt you. I'll stand by you. So, if you're mad, get mad. Don't hold it all inside. Come on and talk to me. What do you got to hide? I
I love that song. That was Chrissie Hynde, of course, and Pretenders, and I'll Stand By You. That was for Dwight and Gary Kirkham from the two playwrights that were here to talk about the one-act Rage Against Violence, which is happening Monday, November 30th at Dunfield Theater. It's $35 at the door. Show starts at 7, but there's a reception before. And it's going to be really, really great. So I'm so glad they had a chance to stop by. If you can, go out and see this show. It's a fundraiser for Women's Crisis of Services of Waterloo Region, and it's going to be a great night.